right. Thank you, Don. And you're talking a lot. So are you feeling better? You weren't doing this at lunchtime when I was here. So maybe things are getting a little better, I hope. Yeah. Good. So we're ready for January 3rd, 1981. This is on page 31 in Consciousness and the Absolute. January 3rd, 1981. Do you know where you were? Yeah, it's hard for me to really know for sure. Yeah. So, Ms., you know where you were? You were in kindergarten. Oh my God. That's. Well, I joined the Air Force in September 1982. So I was somewhere between high school and the Air Force. My guess is I was going to community college at the time and living in Jacksonville, Florida. But it's hard for me to know for sure where I was January 3rd, 1981. Could have been in Atlanta being a nanny, one of those two places. All right. So here's what Niz, are you typing in where you were January 3rd, 1981? Shauna, should I wait? Oh, you were in Atlanta, so I may have been in Atlanta too then. And Shauna says she was showing horses in Reno. George was living in St. Louis. Yeah. Yeah, that's when I lived in Buckhead, maybe. It was 1981, I think. Either 1980 or 1981, I'm not sure. So here we go. Nisargadatta Maharaj speaking. Beingness has the quality to become whatever you think of. Whatever concept you feed to the consciousness will provide you with that. Listen to this. This is an important sentence. Whatever concept you feed to the consciousness will provide you with that. Whatever you hold on to intensely, you are bound to be that. That is the quality of your consciousness. And then he says, you should never think that you are the body. And knowing Nisargadatta, it's very likely, again, that he's going to tell us that we should focus on the I am until we become that, and then continue to look for what's beyond or what its source is until we become that. But, you know, what about if I sit around and think about nobody likes me, right, all the time, nobody likes me. Or I sit around and think about how I'm unfairly treated, or what a victim I am, or how stupid I am, or, you know, I mean, just think about, you know, what you're doing to yourself when you have these thoughts, you know. So even prior to what I'm going to call awakening, just quality of life right here in this, you know, what we call the illusion, right here in the world, this quality of life here can be severely affected by what you choose to dwell on in the mind. Yeah, I guess that's all I have to say, but I'm going to read the sentence again. Whatever concept you feed to the consciousness will provide you with that. And if you really listen to that sentence, it's like a gift. You know, so if I sit around and think about how nobody likes me, I'm going to find proof that nobody likes me in the world. But that's because I'm spending so much time thinking about it. I mean, this is really that what I think, I see, what I see, I experience, what I experience, I think, right? It's that perceptual loop. But maybe what we don't always realize, especially with some of this negative stuff that we dwell on, is when the universe provides it, it's a gift. You know, that's the way NTI Ephesians words it. NTI Ephesians says that, you know, the thoughts that you dwell on, when you dwell on certain types of thoughts, that's like a prayer. And that God always answers your prayer, always gives you what you ask for. But that we don't We just don't realize how we pray. You know, the prayer isn't that 2 minutes a day or 5 minutes a day that you get on your knees and you ask for something. The prayer is what you dwell on throughout the day. And again, I think this was like my weekly gathering on Sunday. You know, really what I was talking about then was, I didn't use the word dwell, but I was talking about learning to dwell on the self. Right? Learning to dwell on the self. If consciousness always gives you what you dwell on, then really all you have to contemplate is what do you really want to receive, and then dwell on that. And it's interesting because I think we probably all know how to dwell. It's not like we have to figure that out. You know, we've been doing that for years. We just have to understand that consciousness is going to give us whatever we dwell on. And then we have to ask ourselves, what do I want to receive? Therefore, what do I want to dwell on? And make sure we're using that skill that we have appropriately to serve us. So whatever concept you feed to the consciousness will provide you with that. Whatever you hold on to intensely, you are bound to be that. That is the quality of your consciousness. And he says you should never think that you are the body. So he's talking to someone maybe who dwells on the fact that they're a body. You know, and some people do that. They dwell constantly on their aches and pains, or on their weight, or on their looks, or on their illnesses, right? Lots of people do that, in fact. And so if you dwell constantly on the fact that you're a body, then the experience that you have is that you are a body. That's how you see yourself, right? So this is really what he's pointing out to someone. You should never think that you are the body. Consciousness is not the body. As a result of the body, the beingness is felt, but beingness is all pervasive. As a result of the body, the beingness is felt, but beingness is all pervasive. I'm not 100% sure what he means by that sentence, but what I think he means, so I'll share that, is that you know, when we perceive ourselves as a body, there is an awareness that we're a living being, right? Bodies, I mean, hearts beat, you breathe, right? I mean, there's an awareness that you're a living being, but you think that living beingness is limited to this body. Right, and what he's saying is, let's find that sentence again. As a result of the body, the beingness is felt. So it's not like you're not aware of the fact that you're alive. But he says, but beingness is all pervasive. So you think your beingness is limited to this body, when actually your beingness is not limited to this body. Consciousness alone feels the expanse of consciousness. Right? So in order to, you know, in order to realize that you are beyond the body, you need to dwell on consciousness until you be consciousness, right? But then he goes on even further, and this is what he seems to be doing a lot in this book. Consciousness alone feels the expanse of consciousness, and then he says, but I, the absolute, am not that. So again, he's pointing out that he has now awakened beyond consciousness entirely. But again, we have three levels here. The first level is the belief that I am this person, I am this body. And what he seems to be encouraging someone to do is to transcend that. He says he says it in the negative, by never thinking that you are a body, right? Don't let your dwelling go there. But I would probably state it in the positive, by dwelling on the fact that you are consciousness. And again, that's what some of the methods of meditation we learn, the awareness, watching awareness, the loving consciousness method. These methods of meditation are dwelling on the fact that you are consciousness in meditation. But that's also what these awareness games are about, right? These are just ways of dwelling on the fact that you are consciousness. And, you know, using the teaching that Nisargadatta is giving us here, right? Whatever concept we feed to the consciousness will provide you with that. whatever you hold on to intensely, you are bound to be that, right? So if we dwell on consciousness, at some point that shift will occur where we will see ourselves as consciousness. But again, he's pointing out that there's still another step, because he says, but I, the absolute, am not that, right? So I don't think I have anything else to say there. Just so, and then the sentence begins. So I'm turning the page. Whatever is known by consciousness, is in the field of consciousness. The consciousness and the knowledge will subside when the food body dies. The absolute always remains. The seed of knowledge is planted in you by these talks. Now you have to follow it up. You must nurse it, ruminate over it, so that the tree of knowledge will grow. So what he's really asking us to do here is to dwell. And how do you do this? Dwell on the teaching that there is something beyond consciousness. And that that's what you really are, and that that's what's eternal. Again, listen to this. Whatever is known by consciousness is in the field of consciousness, right? He's even describing consciousness as limited. And those of you who have done that Bentinho Massaro meditation with me now, you hear Bentinho describe consciousness as limited, right? First, he helps you to, in the meditation, he helps you to realize consciousness by realizing that everything that you see or think of during the meditation, that's just consciousness, that's just consciousness, that's just consciousness, right? And then you pop into consciousness. But then he talks about, then at that point, he asks you to start asking, what's beyond? What's beyond? He wants you to dwell on going beyond consciousness. And this is what Nisargadatta is saying as well. Whatever is known by consciousness. Is in the field of consciousness. If the field, that means it's consciousness is limited. There's a field of consciousness. A field is a limited thing. Now, it's not near as limited as the body. By comparison, you know, it seems unlimited. But by comparison to the absolute, consciousness is limited. It depends on the perspective you're looking from, right? From the body, looking towards consciousness, consciousness is unlimited. But from the absolute, looking at consciousness, consciousness is limited. Whatever is known by consciousness, is in the field of consciousness. The consciousness and the knowledge will subside when the food body dies. The absolute remains. The seed of knowledge is planted in you by these talks. Now you have to follow it up. You must nurse it, ruminate over it, so that the tree of knowledge will grow. So he's just asking us to continually contemplate that we are the absolute, that the absolute is beyond consciousness. And by continually contemplating that, he says we will be that. That will become our experience. And that's the end of that message. So with 15 minutes to go, I'm moving right on to January 4th, 1981. Questioner, I was pondering what Maharaj said about all consciousness being the same this morning. And for just a few seconds, it was as if everything was one and I was behind it. Is this the aim? So what's kind of interesting is that this person was pondering consciousness and then had an experience of consciousness that this person had not had before. So this kind of proves the point of the previous teaching. But again, I was pondering what Maharaj said about all consciousness being the same this morning. And for just a few seconds, it was as if everything was one. And I was behind it. Is this the aim? Nisargadatta says, This is not the aim. It is so. In other words, you realized something that is true. This is not the aim. It is so. It is there. And it is only because of identity with the body that what is doesn't seem as if it is. So he seems to be implying that this isn't something you're making by pondering. You're not creating this by pondering. And again, this goes back to my weekly gathering. I mentioned that, you know, I had pondered things, right? Desired things, many things in my life. And all of those things came to be. My God, I mean, I just cannot tell you. Maybe I'm accidentally skilled at this, but do you see these pillows? They may not look like my, do you notice my chair? You notice how they kind of match the chair, right? It's the same kind of design. But what happened when I moved into this bedroom and I moved this chair into this bedroom, the chair was pretty comfortable. But I did notice, you know, I mean, I'm getting older and the back is a little more picky than it used to be. And it just really felt like, you know, I could really use a pillow here behind my back and even a pillow on my footstool so that my feet could be raised a little higher and not kind of drifting down. Like I'd just be a little more comfortable if I had a couple pillows. So I went online, and of course, I'm going to get a couple pillows. I'd like them to kind of go well with the chair. I went online and I looked and I couldn't find any pillows at all that I thought would look nice with this chair. So I gave up. A few days later, I went out in the garage and there's this bag with these two pillows. I'm like, Mom, what's this? And these pillows she's going to get rid of. They're perfect. You know, they even match the chair, right? It's just amazing to me how when I want something, how quickly I get it. It's amazing to me. It's like, you know, and I've heard this, that as your mind becomes clear, that this speeds up between the wanting and the getting, that it speeds up because you don't have all that unconscious stuff blocking it. I mean, before you were wanting something, maybe, but also dwelling on how unworthy you were at the same time, right? So it's like you're fighting yourself. And when that's cleared up, then you want something and boom, it appears. You know, it's pretty dang quick. So I was talking about this in my weekly gathering on Sunday. What if I take this, and only want one thing? Right? I mean, the perfect house in La Vida. I mean, you guys have seen my house. Well, Ron, you haven't seen the house yet, have you, Ron? I'll show you in December. Wait till you see where I live. You know, wait till you see where I live. And you know, so what if I take that wanting and just put it with wanting truth? Right? Just put it with wanting truth. So, if I just put it with wanting truth, since truth is true and I don't have to make it, right? That should be easy to accomplish. I don't have to manifest the truth, right? I'm just seeing what is so. He says, it's not the aim. The aim maybe is to manifest a couple pillows for the chair or to manifest a nice house in La Vida or to manifest a retreat house in La Vida or, you know. This isn't an aim. This is what's so. All you're really doing is wanting to see what is. This is not the aim. It is so. It is there. And it is only because of identity with the body, only because of, we could call it wrong pondering, right? Only because of wrong pondering that you don't see it. It is there, and it is only because of identity with the body that what is doesn't seem as if it is. Please understand that there is only one thing to be understood, and that is that you are formless. Timeless, unborn. It is because of your identification with the body as an entity that your consciousness, which is universal consciousness, thinks it is dying. Nobody is dying because nobody was born. The millions of forms are the manifestation of consciousness. It is the millions of forms which get created and destroyed. So those are the aims, right? You create something, but it's always temporary. It is the millions of forms which get created and destroyed. But universal consciousness itself is unborn and undying. We would also call that uncreated. It's uncreated. It's the source. It's prior to all creation, but it itself is uncreated. Just imagine if all the millions of forms which have been created were still here. Well, sorry, my mouth sometimes quits working on me. Just imagine if all the millions of forms which have been created were still here. How could other forms be created? It is because consciousness is unborn and undying that the millions of forms get created and destroyed. It is a continuous process. It's interesting because there's a painting that Floyd Henderson uses to teach this very teaching that Nisargadatta is teaching right now. When my mom was unpacking things, she kept telling me how she had this picture she wanted to hang in the most prominent place in our living room above the love seat. And when she finally unwrapped that picture, it was this picture that Floyd Henderson uses to teach exactly what Nisargadatta is teaching right here. Because in the picture, what you see is there's a nest with eggs. That's the beginning of life, form life. And of course, you see the birds. But you right in the front of the picture, there's this huge flower that's blooming. That represents the full bloom of life. But how long does a flower last, right? It blooms and then it dies. And then in the background of the picture, you see these dead trees. So what that picture is showing is two things. It's showing, first of all, that forms come and go. But it's also showing that there's something continuous there. And in this case, it's consciousness. There's something continuous there because if there wasn't something continuous there, there couldn't be this cycle of life, right? So it is the millions of forms which gets created and destroyed, but universal consciousness itself is unborn and undying. Just imagine if all the millions of forms which have been created were still here, how could other forms be created? In other words, consciousness needs death in order to continue to create. Think about that. Death as a natural part of consciousness's creation process. I used to be one of Jehovah's Witnesses, and Jehovah's Witnesses believe that the paradise earth that God intended in the beginning would eventually come to be. And at some point, humans will live forever and ever on a paradise earth and never die. And I remember learning that as a teenager, and even then I would think, won't the earth get too crowded if nobody ever dies? Right? And I would sometimes ask those questions, and it seems like I remember somebody saying, well, maybe there'll be a point where we'll quit having children. And then I'm thinking, a world without children? Do we really want a world without children? You know, and so that's what this is saying, that death, you know, death of form is a part of the creation process. It allows consciousness, which is ongoing, to continually be creative. And so it's not a bad thing. It's just a part of consciousness being what consciousness is, which is continually creative. Just imagine if all the millions of forms which have been created were still here, how could other forms be created? It is because consciousness is unborn and undying that the millions of forms get created and destroyed. It's just consciousness being what consciousness is, right? It is a continuous process. Understand that what you are is this unlimited universal consciousness. And I've talked about this before, the day that Jamie died, when I went for a walk and I just couldn't help but notice how alive life was. You know, every insect I noticed, the leaves in the trees blowing in the wind, I noticed. I mean, the water rushing down the river, I noticed. And I noticed there wasn't a hole in consciousness where Jamie was. You know, that form was gone. But life was as whole and as perfect as it ever was. Understand that what you are is this unlimited universal consciousness, only that in which consciousness manifests itself is limited and is created and destroyed. The total potential of consciousness, the ongoing creation, remains because it is unlimited. You are seeking knowledge from the standpoint of identification with the body and whatever can be grasped by the mind. When this body machine is there, the technique of using it is there. And that is what you are identifying with now. But it is not your true identity. You have no control over it. It has appeared and it will disappear. I talk to you from the perspective of universal consciousness, and I know that all bodies are the essence of food, and they will vanish. So what he's encouraging us to do in this January 4th conversation is to identify with what's eternal, not with what's temporary. Right? Identify with what's eternal, not with what's temporary. And I often call that life awareness. Identify with the life awareness that right now you may experience within this body, but the body ends. You know, next time, you know, we all at some point experience the death of people. You know, we just experienced the death of Hal. Maybe we'll just use Hal, right? Maybe we don't have to wait for next time. We'll just use Hal. Hal is gone. That form is gone. But can you find a whole in life? You know, like my dad once said, everyone is indispensable. If you don't think you're indispensable, he'd say, try putting your finger in a bucket of water, pull it out real fast, and see how big of a hole you leave. And of course, you don't leave a hole. It means you're indispensable. Well, that's actually true. I mean, he was then talking about a job, you know, like you could be fired from any job if you aren't good enough. You're not indispensable. Don't start thinking you are. But that's true. You know, when any one of us dies, just like Hal recently died, life goes on, right? Another baby is born. That's because consciousness didn't die. So the question is, do we want to identify with this temporary form, which will die? Or do we want to begin to shift our identification to consciousness, which does not die? That's what he's asking us to ponder. And with that, I will release the mic.